Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 3rd of October, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Roxanne Thomas and Svarupa Toth from Aware About Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Claire Murphy will be here to remind us about Wednesday's Walk to School Day, find out about activities happening during National Mental Health Awareness Week, and Addison Field from the City Museum will be here to highlight recent acquisitions, chainsaws, and outboard motors. We'll also hear the writer's almanac, Bird Note, music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain, low temperatures around 38 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday looks like rain is likely with high temperatures around 51 degrees. Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nearly 4,000 high school students took the SAT in Alaska this year. Nearly 400 were Native students. As KDLG's Daisha Eaton reports, educators would like to see numbers increase.
Alaska students scored lower on SAT scores this year than last year. Eric McCormick is the Director of Assessment, Accountability, and Information Management with the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. He explains the numbers, starting with critical reading.
In 2010, our average score for college-bound seniors in Alaska was 500. 2011, it dropped to 497. And in looking at mathematics, they had a slight drop from 515 to 514.
Scores in the writing section, which was added 6 years ago, were also a few points lower, at 489 compared to an average score of 491 last year. That's out of a possible score of 800 points for each section, with a total possible score of 2,400 points. McCormick says the lower scores are likely the result of more students taking the SAT than in years past.
We attribute that, hopefully, to interest in the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Kids may be accessing the test that may not have considered it as an option before. And that's something that the department will continue to investigate.
As McCormick explains, the number of American Indian and Alaska Native students needs to be higher.
The American Indian Alaska Native population, our K-12, make up between 20 and 25% of our population. So to only have 9% of our test takers be Alaska Native American Indian means they're testing at a lower rate than the percentage that they make up our enrollment. So that is a number that we are very interested to watch.
The hope, McCormick says, is that more Alaska Native students will begin taking the SAT as they apply for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Chickasaw Nation is using different forms of technology to reach its citizens, which was evident during the tribal leader's address Saturday in Oklahoma. KCNP's Brian Brazier has more.
Each year, more than 1,000 people attend the Chickasaw annual meeting, but many, including Chickasaws serving in the military, cannot. Live audio and video of the meeting was streamed on Chickasaw.net and Chickasaw.tv, and the audio was broadcast on the tribe's community radio station. The theme of this year's event was Celebrate, and during Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby's State of the Nation address, several reasons were given to celebrate.
Our story continues to be one of progress and of growth. We celebrate our ability to steadily move forward as we pay tribute to our past and learn from our history. As I've said in years past, and I hope to say for years to come, the state of the Chickasaw Nation is strong.
Governor Anitubby also announced many expanded programs and services, like the new Chickasaw language application available free for iPhones and iPads. It includes thousands of Chickasaw words and phrases, as well as Chickasaw hymns and videos of skits performed by members of the Children Speaking Chickasaw Club. For National Native News, I'm Brian Brazier.
South Dakota State University is preparing for its annual Consider the Century Conference. In the late 1980s, South Dakota celebrated its centennial under the theme Celebrate the Century. The conference was changed to include Native views on state issues. The 23rd annual conference takes place in Brookings Friday. Speakers will include the Secretary of the South Dakota Department of Tribal Relations to discuss state tribal issues. Other speakers will talk about Indian education, economic conditions, and how research studies can improve tribal sovereignty. During this week in 1979, Dena'ina people in Kenai, Alaska, celebrated a potlatch for the first time in 70 years after they were stopped by the Russian Orthodox Church in the early 1900s. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Friska Sir from Aware, Roxanne Thomas, and also Swara Patath here to talk about Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Thank you for coming down to the station.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
So, Roxanne, you are the advocacy coordinator for Aware here. What do you do as part of your job?
You know, I provide some direct service to women, but I also coordinate all the advocacy services that we provide to both women in shelter and women out of shelter.
And so, Ruby, you're the volunteer coordinator?
I am. I'm the volunteer coordinator, and we have a lot of awesome volunteers who are helping us with events this month, October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Maybe you saw Sarah Lynn's picture in the Juneau Empire with Vice President Joe Biden.
Great picture.
Yeah, Dr. Biden, really bringing awareness to the 17th anniversary of the Violence Against Women Act and highlighting that we want to take the month of October with certain events and like coming on the radio and talking to you about what is it that we want people to be aware of about domestic violence. It's not the happiest topic in the world, but here's what's important that will make people kind of feel better about hearing about domestic violence. And one of the things is that you may not know how to recognize a victim of domestic violence. People think that they don't know anyone who's experienced domestic violence a lot of times, but if you begin to develop your awareness, if you learn a little bit about it, you will notice certain things, certain symptoms. It could be someone in your family, someone in your neighborhood, someone that you work with that suddenly she becomes quiet, withdrawn.
Perhaps missing work. Isolation is definitely a big element of domestic violence. A perpetrator uses active efforts to isolate a victim from all of her support, her friends, family, things like that. So if you notice a woman kind of starting to separate herself from most people in her life, that's a good sign as well.
Yeah, sometimes you can't go out for, dinner afterwards, you can't go out for lunch or something like that. And I love the other thing that we really want to bring forward about domestic violence is what the governor is bringing forward. He brings forward two things in two broad stroke themes. One is to come forward and, there's so much shame around domestic violence that it's hard to find help, to reach out for help. So if you have a story about healing from your domestic violence situation, to be able to share it in the way that he does about his family, so that there isn't that sense of shame. And to recognize that violence is a choice and that if we can choose respect and work with one another without shame, we can really begin to recognize victims of domestic violence and sort of give them that support where they can come forward and step out of what can be years and years of violence in their very own home. So that's what we want to bring forward with our events and by having Roxanne and I here to talk about what we do on a daily basis.
Do you know what time of year does one see an increase in domestic violence?
You know, I don't think that there's a specific time of year. There are, times that we see a spike, and it's often, in my experience, it's often after holidays. I think that victims kind of do everything within their power to keep the family together, despite how difficult that might be through the holidays. And then kind of afterwards, they sometimes are seeking safety.
Knowing that, does AWARE do anything to kind of get ready for times like this?
You know, I think that we just stay ready. Really, we're prepared every day to serve victims.
Yeah, I've noticed in Juneau, on a full moon, on a sunny day, you bring both the moon and the sun, just like the police department, especially on full moons, but it's hard to predict, and we're always ready. And it seems we're always pretty busy, too.
So it's kind of like disaster preparedness that the city does. You always want to be ready for whatever comes up.
That's right. That's right.
What are the kinds of events do you have this month?
Well, it's the entire month of October we have events, but we're highlighting a number of events on October the 15th, which is a Saturday. We'll have a Walk in a Mile in Her Shoes 5K run, or a one-mile walk. And this will be on October the 15th, that's a Saturday, at Sandy Beach. And people can run a 5K, of course, in their running shoes. And then the one-mile march would be in high heels as a part of an international men's march to stop gender violence. So, guys, get out your high heels and come and join us. There's a pre-registration of $15, and you can go to JRC or Pavitt's, Foggy Mountain, the Nugget Outfitters to register for that. And then simultaneously on October the 15th, at the Zach Gordon Youth Center from 9 to 3, we have a women's self-defense class, and this is a great idea. The cost here is $10, and scholarships, of course, are available, and that's also true for our Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. The White Ribbon Campaign, you'll notice that we're really engaging with men, and we love this. The Southeast Alaska Board of Realtors is working to build strong communities and championing Juneau's White Ribbon Campaign. We are really feeling a shift in a movement that's been mostly women-centered, and men are stepping forward and really joining us. And it does take the entire community to make a change like this, and it affects the entire community. So the White Ribbon Campaign is to take a pledge online. I pledge not to commit, condone, or remain silent about violence against women and girls. So that's being headed up by the Alaska Board of Realtors, and we love partnering with them. On Wednesday, October the 19th, there's a movie that we're going to have at the Nickelodeon downtown. And this film highlights just what I was talking about, how connected we all are, the entire community, when we confront domestic violence. It's a movie called Telling Amy's Story. It's been on HBO. It's a really good movie. And after the film, AWARE staff will host a discussion at the Franklin Street Heritage Cafe. A couple of other things we have going on is, if when you're at the Nugget Mall, look at what the kids, the fifth graders, worked with the theme, What Choosing Respect Means to Me. So picking up on the governor's theme of choosing respect. They did some artwork in their fifth grade classes, and that'll be displayed at the Nugget Mall during the whole month of October. So those are pretty much, you can, on First Friday, you can go and pick up some purple ribbons. We'll all be wearing them to just remind one another. And I think if there's one thing that you walk away with, it's to be able to recognize that someone might be reaching out to you and you may not recognize it. And one of the things that you can do to help is to help alleviate that sense of shame, to really address the situation with a lot of respect, and to recognize that at AWARE we have so many things that women can. There's not only shelter and emergency crisis intervention, there are groups women can come in for an hour and just chat totally confidentially. It's our number one priority, safety and confidentiality. So it can be a telephone call and nothing more, or a meeting in a room, or they can come to groups, support groups, bring their kids to support groups for kids, or take shelter. There are so many different ways. And if the shame can be alleviated, there's a real sense of respect and being able to take ownership and autonomy of your life and to lift out of what can be a long-term abusive situation for women.
I've been talking to Roxanne Thomas and Swaroopa Toth from AWARE about Domestic Violence Awareness Month and the activities involved in such. If people need more information on that, what's the phone number and do you have a website?
Website is www.awareak.org. And you can call us at AWARE at 586-6623. Anytime, night or day, 24/7, we're there.
I'd just like to add that one in four women experience an incident of domestic violence at least once in their lifetime. You know, I think that there's this perception that we don't know anybody in our lives that experienced domestic violence. And really, the chances are that you know many people. And there is a real, you know, the barrier of the shame. A victim is often blamed by the perpetrator, and often she blames herself. And so I just want everybody to really think that this is, you know, has an impact on all of us. It really does.
And we're a Purple Ribbon on Friday. Where can people get Purple Ribbons?
All around town. We'll have them at the art galleries and at some of the stores and businesses and right by the cash registers. Or the foods and snacks.
All right, Swaroopa and Roxanne, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 3rd of October, 2011. It was on this date, 1849, Edgar Allan Poe was found delirious outside a pub in Baltimore. He'd been en route from Richmond to Philadelphia on a business trip, stopped off in Baltimore on the 28th. Reasons known only to him, he was found on Lombard Street outside Ryan's Tavern, and he appeared to be dressed in someone else's clothing. He was unkempt. He was taken to a hospital where he lapsed in and out of consciousness, lucid sometimes, often delirious, until he died 4 days later. He was never able to tell anyone how he came to be in this condition. Newspapers suggested congestion of the brain, but there was no death certificate, no autopsy, and the reason for his death remains a mystery. Because he was found outside a tavern, many people assumed he was drunk, even though he'd stopped drinking 6 months before. Another theory says that Poe was the victim of cooping, in which political gangs would kidnap people, imprison them, drug them, beat them, force them to vote repeatedly in polling places all over the city wearing disguises. And Ryan's Tavern was a polling place, and Paul was found on Election Day. And what's more, his clothes were ill-fitting, dirty, threadbare, and Poe had a reputation as a natty dresser. Much of the Poe legend that he was a drunk and a madman originated with a memoir and an obituary written by an enemy of his, Rufus Griswold. Mr. Griswold had been the object of one of Edgar Allan Poe's scathing reviews. Mr. Griswold's own literary output has long since been forgotten. Today is the birthday of the novelist Thomas Wolfe, 1900 in Asheville, North Carolina, the youngest of eight children. Father was a stonecutter, mother ran a boarding house, and speculated in real estate. The parents appeared in his novels as Oliver and Eliza Gant. Wolfe himself was Eugene Gant. Thomas Wolfe wanted to be a playwright, and it was on a trip abroad, 1926, he first turned to fiction, began what would become his most famous novel, Look Homeward, Angel, a book which, like his later work, was a thinly veiled autobiography. He was on a trip to Seattle in 1938 when he came down with pneumonia, which turned into tuberculosis of the brain. He died just before his 38th birthday. And it's the birthday of Gore Vidal, born at the West Point Academy in New York in 1925, where his father was an instructor. Best known for his works of historical fiction, Julian, Burr, Lincoln, and his big bestseller in 1968, Myra Breckinridge, also author of two memoirs, Palimpsest and Point-to-Point Navigation. Here's a poem for today, an old lyric by Samuel Woodworth, The Old Oaken Bucket. How dear to this heart are the scenes of my childhood, when fond recollection presents them to view. The orchard, the meadow, the deep tangled wildwood, and every loved spot which my infancy knew. The wide-spreading pond and the mill that stood by it, the bridge in the rock where the cataract fell, the cot of my father, the dairy house nigh it, and e'en the rude bucket which hung in the well, the old oaken bucket, the iron-bound bucket, the moss-covered bucket which hung in the well. From a song lyric by Samuel Woodworth. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Constant Contact, combining the power of email marketing and social media for more customers and more time back on your clock. ConstantContact.com. And by Novo Nordisk, since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at NovoNordisk-US.com. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:21 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about International Walk to School Day, which is Wednesday, October 5th. Claire Murphy and Steve Songson from the Safe Route to School people in the Department of Transportation. Claire and Steve, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the general concept of the Walk to School Day concept, I guess?
Yeah. Well, basically it's to draw attention, it's an international event, but to draw attention to the importance and the safety issues for kids walking or biking to school. And October, the first week in October, is a date that's commemorating some of those issues and how to help kids be more safe.
How did it start?
Well, it started years ago, actually in Great Britain, when they were trying to figure out ways to get kids safer to school. And so they put together a walking group that could walk to school as a group, and now these things are called walking school buses. But it's a group of people that walk together with a parent leader so that kids can be safer in a group of people.
In Juneau here, how many people do you think walk to school? What percentage of the kids go to school?
It's hard to say. It depends on the school location and all that sort of thing. But nationally, they say that right now around 13 to 15% of kids walk or bike to school. In some places, it's even lower than that, where about 40 years ago, it was about 70 to 80% of the people walked or biked to school if they lived within a mile of an elementary school. So it's a lot less now than it was years ago.
Why do you think that's changed so much?
Variety of different things. I think more parents drive their kids to school for a number of reasons. Safety is an issue, concern about bullying, and other things. And some schools are just a long distance from where the kids actually live. If kids do live within a mile of school, typically it's a good walking distance. They can walk that in about 15 minutes. But once it gets out beyond a mile, a lot of parents do drive their kids to school.
Do you think anybody walked 5 miles through the dirt and rain and the snow to get to school?
That's the way it used to be, and still is in some communities, I'm told.
What about some tips for people who are interested in walking to school, Claire?
Well, do you want to talk about some of these things, Claire?
Well, reflector safety in Alaska is a big issue. So we give out reflectors that are visible for 500 feet, and they really do make a difference. A white T-shirt is only visible for about 180 feet, and it takes a car going 40 miles an hour 260 feet to stop. So when the reflector allows the students to be more visible, that really helps a lot. Walking on the correct side of the street, when you're walking, it's good to be on the left side. Walking against traffic, if you're on a bicycle, it's good to be riding with traffic on the right. So on our reflectors, it says, walk left, ride right, so students can remember that.
How are students getting the reflectors?
We mail them out here in Juneau. We often do presentations in schools and give them out. We mail them upon request, and we're partnering with different organizations like the Alaska Injury Prevention Center, which also gives out reflective tape so they can put on their backpacks as well.
And you've brought some here to KTOO, so we'll leave them in the front desk so people can pick them up here if they want to.
Yeah.
We could do that.
You can always call us at the Department of Transportation Safe Routes to School program and request reflectors as well.
What's the phone number?
907-465-2496.
What ages are we talking about when we're talking about kids walking to school?
Well, it's usually kids. It depends on the age group, obviously. And kindergarten through third grade are obviously young, too young to probably walk by themselves. Usually by age 10, kids have a better developed sense of the ability to recognize speed or distance. And prior to the age of 10, kids often don't have those perceptions well developed yet. So for the younger kids, it's best to walk with an older brother or sister in the younger grades. But as kids get around 10, 11, 12 years old, they probably, you know, with their parents' consent, of course, can walk safely to school.
And what's happening here in Juneau on Wednesday?
Well, at DZ Middle School, we're going to have the first official Walk to School Day event in Juneau. And they expect almost 100 children to participate. They're going to have hot drinks and signs and games for kids to play when they arrive, but there's also going to be a walking school bus going from the Walmart City Bus Stop and the Lemon Creek City Bus Stop starting at 7:30. And a walking school bus is just when a group of children walks to school accompanied by one or more adults. So it's kind of an elegant solution to a lot of the fears parents have with their children walking to school alone. When they're accompanied by an adult, the adults are modeling safe behavior, and it's good to have one in the front, one in the back. And it's just a great way for kids to get together, to get outside, reduce air pollution, and have fun.
I'd say it's a good idea to walk to work if you can and do it as well.
Oh, yeah, or bike.
So is biking considered okay this Wednesday?
Oh, yes. You can walk or roll to school on scooters, on bicycles. Definitely.
Roller skates, what have you.
People power.
Yeah.
Cool. What else is going on nationally? Are you aware of things that are going on across the country?
Well, the Safe Routes to Schools program is now involved in over 11,400 communities nationwide, so it's quite a movement. It's really a grassroots movement that starts in communities and schools over concern typically about safety for kids walking and biking to school. The Safe Routes to Schools program was designed to have an impact on the obesity epidemic and the fact that children are getting larger in many places, and in Alaska we have particular issues with that. We're ahead of the curve in terms of childhood obesity compared to many other states, and weather is a factor of that, but it's more about finding safe ways for kids to walk or bike to school, and if it's not safe, finding ways to help make it more safe. And often that's with just participating in walking school buses and raising awareness both for children and for drivers and parents about the importance of being seen and to look out for hazards and a variety of different safety messages.
Another option might be for the parents to walk to school with their child and then walk to work themselves.
Well, that's ideal. That doesn't work with a lot of people's schedules for a variety of reasons, but we often find that if you live within a half mile of school, you can walk that or bike it as fast as you can drive it in a car by the time, you know, the parking and everything else goes on. So anything within a half mile, you can get by people power almost as fast as by driving.
I've been talking to Claire Murphy and Steve Sunkson about the International Walk to School Day, which is scheduled for Wednesday, October 5th here in Juneau. If people need more information, is there that phone number again, please?
Oh, my office number is 907-465-2496.
Or mine is 907-465-4069, or you can find us under Alaska Safe Routes to School. Google that, and you'll take directly to our website.
And you'll be able to fix people up with a reflector as well?
Reflectors as well. Yeah, we've sent out a lot of those throughout the state, so they're showing up in many places in Alaska, and we're glad to see it.
All right, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
There's a number of communities in Alaska that are going to be doing this. Like I say, it's kind of part of a growing movement that's working across the state and across the country. And everybody be careful out there. Be especially careful when you're in a crosswalk. We hear of more and more hazards and issues of people being hit when they're in a crosswalk. We always have to remember where the car is and try not to get hit.
All right, Steve and Claire, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Thank you.
Do I have to walk to school? Okay. Yes, I have my homework. Yes, I have my lunch. No, I won't dawdle.
First I step at an easy pace, an easy pace like a turtle in a race. Step, 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 step like a turtle in a race. Taking my time, on my way to school. I bounce and I bounce and I bounce like a bean on a tramp, a trampoline. Bounce, 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 bounce like a trampoline. Taking my time, on my way to school. Then I hop and I hop and I hop like a room, a room,
a room,
a kangaroo-bee-doo. Taking my time, on my way to school. Then I skip, and I skip, just a little. Skip like a drip on a red hot griddle. Skip, I skip, I skip, I skip like a drip on a griddle. Taking my time, down a fat man's throat. Gallop, 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 gallop some more. Gallop right in through the schoolhouse door. Running out of time, on the way to school. Am I in time? Just in time, I'm here at school.
I'm Chapin. Time is 3:32, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Katie Chapman. She's here to talk about National Mental Health Awareness Week, which is the first week in October. Katie, thank you very much for being on the station with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So there's an annual meeting coming up here on Thursday, October 6th. That's one of the things we get to talk about. But first, let's talk about NAMI, please, because what kind of organization is it nationally, statewide, and also here in Juneau?
Sure. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's a national organization. The national organization is located in Arlington, Virginia. And then there's NAMI pretty much, I think, in every state, a state chapter. And then within those states, there's local affiliates in the communities. And here in Alaska, we have a NAMI chapter in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and here in Juneau. We are a nonprofit organization, and we have we're located in the St. Anne's Building on Sixth Street on the third floor. And National Mental Illness Awareness Week, it was first recognized and established by Congress in 1990 to bring awareness to some of NAMI's efforts to bring awareness about mental illness and to bring education and support to families. And a few weeks ago at the City Assembly, Mayor Botello and City Assembly signed a proclamation declaring October 4th through October 8th as Mental Illness Awareness Week here in Juneau. So that's very exciting.
And what is the statistics? Like 1 in 4 people are affected by mental illness?
That's right. 1 in 4 people will experience a mental health issue at some point in their life.
Besides funding, what are some of the biggest challenges NAMI faces?
Besides funding, I think just continuing our efforts to bring education to the community, especially with youth. I'm going into the high schools to introduce a curriculum titled Breaking the Silence, and it's all about educating youth about what mental illness is, and it's stigma busting. I think as far as challenges, just more opportunity to bring education to the community.
Besides that, going to the high schools, what other kind of current projects and programs do you have going?
We have our Family to Family class, which starts tonight at 5:30 at the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center, and pre-registration was required for this. However, if there's anyone out there who wants to get on, you sure can call me at 463-4251 and register here at the last minute. But this is a 12-week course that educates people about mental illness it's aimed at families and caretakers of a loved one who has a mental illness, and it empowers them to advocate for their loved one and really teaches them how to take care of themselves as well. So we've got the family to family. We have on Thursday the 6th is our annual membership meeting, and it's open to the public. You don't necessarily have to be a member to attend. It's at 6 o'clock at St. Paul's Parish on Atland Street, I believe. And, just show up at 6 o'clock. We'll have soup and snacks and salad. And our guest speaker is Tom Chard from the Alaska Mental Health Board, and he'll be there to speak about what's happening on the state level in terms of suicide, alcohol and drug abuse, and mental health, the different kind of efforts taking place for prevention. And then on Saturday, we are partnering with Southeast Alaska Independent Living. Together, we're going to put on a fundraiser called Run, Walk, and Roll. It's a 5K and a 1 mile event. It's going to be held at Twin Lakes at 9 a.m. this Saturday. You can pre-register at the JRC downtown and in the valley, and also at the Nugget Mall at the Nugget Alaska Outfitters. You could also call SAIL at 586-4920, or you could call NAMI at 463-4251 to register. If you pre-register, it's $10. If you register at the event, it's $15.
So. And as far as the annual meeting is concerned, what else is on the agenda?
Besides the annual meeting and the NAMI, the agenda at the meeting?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have the guest speaker, Tom Chard. I'll give a presentation about NAMI and what's going on as far as our projects and our goals for the year. We'll get to meet the board and hopefully select some new board members. And we just hope to see our members and people who are interested in being a member.
You mentioned something about suicide prevention, the work that you're doing.
Sure. NAMI is a partner with the Juno Suicide Prevention Task Force, and we have a community-based services coordinator, Chris Cairns, whose primary responsibility is to bring awareness and education to the community about suicide prevention and intervention. We've been showing the Dr. Bauer video at United Way on the first Tuesday of every month. So that is continuing. That will also take place tomorrow at United Way from 5:15 to 7. And what else is there? Today, another thing here, the University of Alaska Southeast, they also are recognizing Mental Illness Awareness Week, and there's some activities going on out at the university. There's a Dr. Bauer presentation this evening at 5:15 in the Marant Cafe. So there's definitely some things happening with the task force there. And one other thing I forgot to mention, October 6th is National Depression Screening Day. So there is free screening to the public in two different locations. The first location is at the Marant Cafe at UAS. That's from 1:15 to 3:15. And the other location is at the Front Street Clinic on 225 Front Street, Suite 202, from 10 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 4. And this is an opportunity for people to just go in and check and get a screening for depression. And then from there, you'll be provided with a bunch of resources to go get some extra support if you need it.
And about how long does this take?
The screening? I'm not exactly sure. I don't know how long the screening. It can't take that. It can't take too long.
Katie Chapman here from NAMI. Thank you very much for coming in and talking about National Mental Health Awareness Week.
Thank you for having me.
And the annual meeting Thursday, October 6th, again at St. Paul's Church.
Mm-hmm. St. Paul's Parish Hall.
All right. Thank you for coming by, Katie.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Pinyon jays are big, blue, and noisy. You'll find them in the West, sometimes in flocks of more than 100 birds. The Jays take their name from pinyon pines. These trees produce pine nuts, long valued by Native Americans, and now sold in supermarkets. Large, nutritious seeds, pine nuts store very well. Extracting the seeds from cones, the Jays fill their throats, then fly to traditional caching sites, sometimes miles away, to push each seed into the leaf litter. They use these cache sites year after year, and they have an uncanny ability to find their stored food. Collectively, they cache millions of seeds, some of which sprout before they can be eaten. Thus, the birds become pinyon pine gardeners. Today, however, millions of acres of pinyon juniper woodland have been cleared for grazing, and mature trees are dying from drought and beetle infestations. Yet by traveling long distances to find new habitat, the Jays persist. Pinyon Jays are essential to the pines. The pines, essential to the Jays. In their mutual dependency, we find one of the many vital links in nature. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving caramel apple sundaes and parfaits. McDonald's is open daily in the valley on Trout Street.
Time is 3:41 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Here in the studio with me are Addison Field, who's a curator of collections from the City Museum. Also Victoria, who's the new intern for this time of year. Addison and Victoria, thank you very much for being in the station today.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you.
So you were here to talk about recent acquisitions, which is coming up this first Friday.
Absolutely.
How do you acquire things?
How do we acquire things? Well, most of the things we acquire are donations, and those can happen anyway. But I would say primarily there's a lot of people who just walk through the door, and they've got a collection of objects or photos or ephemera or paperwork or whatever, and they're just interested in making sure that it gets preserved, and we're happy to do that if that it applies to the mission of the Juneau Douglas City Museum.
So you don't accept everything?
I'm afraid, yeah, we don't. We can't. We've got a mission to preserve the art and culture and history of the Juneau Gold Belt, the Juneau Douglas area. So primarily our collecting revolves around that. And so while there are other treasures that come in, we can't necessarily keep them all. We can't keep everything. So we try and find alternative homes for some of that other stuff.
So what's the process once you decide you want to take something? First, you have to find a place to put it.
Well, we have a collections committee, and the collections committee meets periodically. We discuss the pending acquisitions, and then that's one of the questions that we discuss is whether we have a place to put it. As you know, some of the history in this state is really big, including some of the the mining objects, mining artifacts, and logging things, and all sorts of stuff that it either could be too big for us to store, or it could come in with an inherent vice, or there might be questions of ownership, and we have to sort of weigh all those as a committee and decide whether we're going to keep something or not.
And you want to make sure you think about it, because you don't want it to be like many things in our house. Oh, I shouldn't have thrown that away.
Right. Well, when the museum agrees to take something as a donation to add it to its permanent collection, we agree to take care of it in perpetuity. So it's not a small thing that we're doing. We're planning on taking care of it for forever, essentially, until the museum no longer exists or the objects turn into dust.
And you're having a show this first Friday on recent acquisitions.
Right, yeah. On Friday, we've got a new show that's opening called Recent Acquisitions 11, and this show is built around some of those things that have been donated to us in the last 3 years. It's going to be in our video gallery, so it's one of the small galleries at the back of the museum there. And it's a small show, 15 objects, but there are 3 sculptural pieces, 4 historic photos, and the balance is 2D art and history objects. So it's a lot of fun. I've had a blast putting together the information for it, the labels, and doing the historical research on the objects that have come in. It's been a lot of fun.
What makes these objects special?
Well, I think that they're all intricately interwoven with the history of Juneau, whether it's a photograph, a Winter and Pond photograph from 1906, or whether it's campaign memorabilia from 1986. There's still parts of our history and part of the collective story of Juneau. And so to get it in a room there and show it and talk about it is a lot of fun. And it's really just fun to show it. And it's all sort of attractive for its own sake as well.
Are you a junk collector at home?
I am not. I'm not much of a collector at home. I don't know how I came into this, but I guess I was as a kid. I think getting you into this profession, you fix a little of that because you see some real serious junk collections, I guess.
Please don't let this happen to me.
Well, there's ethical standards too for curators and people who work in museums as well. You know, we don't want to be sort of competing with the museum for what we collect or historic objects out there. So we as a profession take that very seriously.
Mm-hmm. It's happening this Friday on the 7th, the first Friday. It's happening the next day, October 8th. These are your coffee collections program featuring chainsaws and outboards.
Right. This is our first installment of our coffee and collections program, which happens on Saturdays throughout the winter. And I'm actually going to be the one who's giving the presentation on Saturday. It's a curator's tour of our summer exhibit, Chainsaws and Outboards on the Last Frontier. So if you're interested in those little bits of material culture, come on in and I'll show you around.
How many chainsaws are in the show?
There are 5 chainsaws and 5 outboards, and they are primarily date from the 40s and 50s, or around that time frame. And it was an interesting time, sort of in the development of the internal combustion engine. 30s, 40s, 50s, and everybody was, when there were inventors working in their back. In their garage, making this stuff and making inventions that would sort of change the way these things developed. Got an outboard that goes back to 38. It's a 1938. It's a little 1.1 horse. That's one of the first outboards with forward and reverse. When you wanted to go in reverse, you just turned it 180 degrees. And so it's a pretty fun little outboard to see. And then we've got one of the first electronic ignition outboards, and that's pretty fun there. On the saw side, we've got a big 755 McCullough. So that's a two operator saw, 7 meaning of 7 horsepower, 55 meaning the power head itself weighed 55 pounds. And I actually put the bar on that saw, and that bar has to weigh another 30 pounds, the bar and chain. So, I mean, it's just a monstrous piece of machinery there. And then all the way through to some of the Pioneer saws, the likes of which were sold down at the old Warner's Marine down on the waterfront there.
So a chainsaw is not just a chainsaw, just a chainsaw.
I find chainsaws absolutely fascinating. The old ones are, they switch from these old carburetors that you had to operate them in the upright position, so they had a blade that swiveled, the bar swiveled, and then to go to a post-war development of a diaphragm carburetor in which they developed for the fighter planes during World War II. So in other words, you could turn the saw upside down at that point, and this is very very interesting. And then along with that was the development of the chains as well. As the chains developed, the saws were able to run more efficiently. So it's fun. I enjoy it.
Sounds like it.
And the outboard stuff is very fun. And so if you're interested in this sort of development of these two little engines that had a profound impact on the way we live our lives around here, I think one of the reasons, or one of the things that brought me to this show was, I was sitting in a friend's boat on the way down to Tanaki, and I had just been reading some information about some of the mines that were operating over in Hawk Inlet and in Funter Bay. And, you know, 100 years ago, those places may have well been on the edge of the planet. They were a long ways away. And here I was buzzing down to Tanaki, in, you know, less than 100 years later, you know, to go deer hunting. And we were doing it all in a day. It was just sort of very profound difference. And I wanted to, or we wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Cool. And that's part of the Coffin Collection series, the first one happening this Friday, Saturday, excuse me, starting at 10 o'clock.
That's right. Let me just check this. It's at 10:30, Jeff. Yeah, 10:30 at the museum. That's Saturday, October 8th at 10:30.
And there's free admission during the month of October?
There is free admission during the month of October. And so come on in and see the museum.
Sounds good. Upcoming exhibits?
The upcoming exhibits coming up in December, we have a show. It's a Rasmussen retrospective show. We've been lucky enough to participate in the Rasmussen Art Acquisition Program over the last 8 years. We've collected over 20 artwork by over 20 different Juno artists. So we're going to bring many of those works out and put them on the walls for the first time.
Addison Field and Victoria, thank you very much for coming down here and talking about the First Friday exhibit and also the Kaufman Collection series. First Friday opens up about 4:30 on Friday.
That's right, 4:30.
And then Saturday at 10:30, and then that's free, and there's coffee provided by Heritage Coffee, from what I understand.
Yes, Jeff, thank you.
Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No.
So goddamn cold, I couldn't get out of bed. As I lay there shivering, as cold as I could be, suddenly a revelation came to me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, stand the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, and all night long, stole her fire. I pulled a nap down at the co-op. I notice I'm a stump. I don't care if she's skinny and I don't care if she's plump. I don't care if she's pretty or ugly as sin. But if she's got a chainsaw, she can move right in. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw. Spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw. And all night long, kind of gentle, but we would never fight. If she went out with other guys, I wouldn't get uptight. She could just do her thing, I could just do mine. For her and me and that machine, we'd get along just fine. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw, spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw. Heavy pickup truck with stereo and four-wheel drive to pull us through the muck. I got 100 pounds of soybeans, a barrel of brown rice, a dozen cords of firewood, sure would be nice. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw to spend the winter with me. I gotta find me a woman with a chainsaw. Let's go for fire, yes, me.
tonight on 360 North, watch 2 hours of international and Alaska news starting with the BBC World News Early Edition at 6 p.m. Science for Alaska at 8 presents Some Like It Hot, Volcanoes in the Infrared. Learn how new technology has improved studies of eruptions in Alaska. Then at 9:30, it's the New Madrid Seismic Zone, Rumblings of Imminence. It's a great way to look at science tonight on 360 North.
Krishna Devi. Before that, we heard from Remy Rudd and from Whitehorse, Gotta Find a Woman with a Chainsaw. Time is 3:57. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Knox Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable, Juneau on Digital Channel 8701. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, Ben Moore will be your guest host. We'll be talking with filmmaker Jen Hoffman about the Eskimo and the Whale film, which will be shown on 360 North this Wednesday at 8 o'clock. We'll also be talking to people from Discovery Southeast about their early dismissal Mondays program. LaCosta and Cheryl Levitt will be here to talk about the Windy Witch Roundup going on Wednesday night at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. And also Michelle Moore will be here to talk about the Juneau Douglas High School Theater play, The Curious Savage. That's coming up tomorrow at 3 on Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain, low temperatures around 37 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, rain likely with high temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. And the forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain. High temperatures around 50 degrees. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today. Have a pleasant evening. All Things Considered is coming up next.